This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents 30 Day Boyfriend, written by Whitney G., performed by Aaron Mallon and Zachary Weber.
Days left until I get to quit. 730 days, 17,520 hours, 1,051,200 minutes, 63,072,000 seconds. The Assistant, Emily. There was only one thing worse than waking up at 5 o'clock every Monday morning. It was waking up knowing that the rest of my week was about to be spent working at Wolf Industries. Beep, beep, beep. The sound of my alarm jerked me out of my thoughts, and I rolled across my bed, yanking my clock from the wall. Sighing, I tossed the covers off my body and slipped into the bathroom, taking a quick hot shower. The second I stepped out, I covered my face with a light layer of makeup and put on one of my favorite navy blue dresses with complimenting nude heels. I debated whether I should wear something more festive to celebrate today's occasion, but this shit was not worth celebrating. Ever. I picked up my phone and noticed a slew of new messages from my closest coworkers. Congratulations, Emily! Congrats on making it 2 years with the Wolf, Emily! Go, Emily! 2 years? How the fuck did you last this long? Are we celebrating this or nah? Another year at my job should have warranted a night of champagne, a celebratory evening with friends, or even legitimate happiness. But working for Nicholas A. Wolf, the literal Wolf of Wall Street, just meant another X stamped on my days until I get to quit calendar. One of the most infuriating men I'd ever worked for, Mr. Wolf was an alluring enigma who ate deals for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. He was the type of man who owned a different designer suit and $1,000 watch for every day of the year. He was also, unfortunately, the type of man who still managed to make me wet, despite his weekly assholery, especially when I was seconds away from wanting to slap him. Over the past 2 years, I'd spent more time with him than I'd spent with anyone else in my life. He was the first person I saw in the mornings, the last person I spoke to at night, and since we were both workaholics, he was the one person I saw every weekend. I stood by his side as he ruthlessly ran his billion-dollar corporation, as he channeled his life lessons from one too many viewings of The Godfather. I sat in on meetings with his closest cabinet of executives, taking notes on their body language and watching anyone who was suspected of being disloyal. And I accompanied him on all of his business trips, foreign and domestic, dutifully keeping him abreast of the inner workings of his corporation. Our 2-year business relationship now mirrored a modern marriage, without the sex. The only benefits I gained from working under him were material: unlimited town car access, a corner office that overlooked Manhattan, access to his credit account whenever I wanted to go shopping, and a salary that was more than 5 times what most CEOs paid their executive assistants. Then again, it was a salary I was never truly able to enjoy because I was always working. My life was his life. Scrolling down my list of contacts, I sent my town car driver a text. Me: I'll be ready in 20 minutes. Driver: I'll be there in 15. I set out some food and water for my kitten Luna. Then I called Wolf Industries' main receptionist. Mr. Wolf's office, she answered on the first ring. This is Savannah Smith speaking. How may I direct your call this morning? Savannah, it's Emily. I'm calling with your first set of tasks for the day. I'm all ears, Miss Johnson. I need you to make sure the conference room is cleared for Mr. Wolf's 8 o'clock meeting with Vancouver, I said. I'll also need the files from Pierce Inc. on my desk so I can pull out all of the unnecessary segments he hates before I give it to him for final approval. I'll also need you to book me a 5-minute meeting with HR so I can write up the intern who was flirting with him the past Friday. He didn't appreciate that. Oh, and can you call Einstein's Bagels and tell them I'll be there to pick up his breakfast 10 minutes earlier than usual? Right away, Miss Johnson. She was always way too cheery in the morning. I'll see you soon, and congratulations on your 2-year anniversary here. I hope you're feeling proud today. Far from it. Thank you. See you soon. I ended the call and turned up the volume on the last few minutes of Market Watch, listening for any last-minute changes. I clasped my favorite bracelet onto my wrist and walked over to my twin sister's bedroom. I'm leaving now, Jenna, I said, knocking. Can you make sure you sign for my packages this afternoon? What? She immediately swung her door open and raised her eyebrow. I thought you were quitting today. I am. I just have to make sure a few things are in place first, and I want to make sure that I stopped talking once I spotted a naked guy sprawled across her mattress. Who is that on your bed? I don't see anyone. She smiled. Who is that on your bed? What? No one. Exactly, she said. No one. Ever. A horn suddenly honked outside our brownstone, and I stepped back before the two of us started another argument about her ridiculous sex life. We're definitely talking about this when I get back. I rushed to the living room and grabbed my briefcase. I buttoned my coat and headed outside, slipping into the back seat of my town car.
Good morning, Miss Johnson.
The driver, Vinny, looked at me through the rearview mirror.
Shall I congratulate you on your momentous achievement, or keep that praise to myself?
Keep it to yourself, I laughed. You've lasted for 10 years. That's far longer than I have.
Not exactly.
He smiled as he pulled onto the road.
I've never had to work directly under Mr. Wolf.
Very true. I'm so jealous of your life right now.
I bet, he said. Where are we headed before I drop you off at headquarters this morning?
I need to pick up some files from Deutsche on 5th, a report from an associate of the Lehman Brothers on 7th, and I need to get his usual breakfast and coffee from Einstein's.
Right away.
He shot me a look of sympathy before coasting through the streets. By the time I arrived at the main building, it was 7:30, which gave me 5 minutes to spare before Mr. Wolf arrived. I set out the morning files on his desk, poured the coffee from the paper cup into one of his preferred mugs, and ordered one of the interns to organize his dry cleaning in the private closet. As I was spreading cream cheese on his bagel, my phone repeatedly buzzed in my pocket. Secret employee thread. The Wolf is here. I rolled my eyes. I was beyond annoyed that we were still calling him the name that further inflated his massive ego. Me. Can we switch his name to the douchebag or the asshole just for one day? Secret employee thread. Never. Secret employee thread. Hell no. Secret employee thread. The Wolf. I walked out of his office at the very moment he stepped off the elevator. Talking on his cell phone, he strolled through the hallway, looking sexy as ever in a 3-piece gray suit. His monogrammed W cufflinks sparkled against the light, and his Italian leather shoes shone so brightly that they practically said, "Yes, we're new, and yes, he's only wearing us once." Every woman in his path did an obvious double take, earning a cocky smirk from his full lips and a look of appreciation from his deep blue eyes.
"Good morning, Mr. Wolf."
The receptionist blushed and handed him a folder as he walked by.
"Good morning, Miss Smith."
He gave her a smile and ended his call, heading straight toward me. He looked me up and down as he approached, stopping when I didn't move.
"Miss Johnson?"
"Mr. Wolf?"
"Is there any reason why you're currently out here and not waiting in my office to give me my morning updates?"
"There is." I handed him a sheet of paper. "I've emailed you all the updates you need, and here's the printout. I just remembered that I have an important doctor's appointment this morning, so I need to be on my way. I should be back by lunch."
"If you're going to be gone that long, did you at least call the Petersons of
Monteverde?" I finished his sentence. "Yes, and they've agreed to reschedule. And before you ask, I've had Savannah prepare the conference room for your 8 o'clock session with Vancouver. And the interns, minus the one who was flirting with you, are prepping the boardroom for the afternoon meeting with your PR team."
"What about my conference call with Mellon?"
"I rescheduled it for tomorrow," I said. "I figured your PR meeting might go over."
"Hmm. How interesting."
I bit my lip to prevent myself from saying something sarcastic. After all this time, this man was still incapable of giving me a fucking thank you, as if his lips were somehow allergic to the words.
"Well, in that case, I'll see you after your doctor's appointment," he said, unlocking the door to his office. "I hope all is well with you."
"I'm sure you do." Half an hour later, I stepped into the glittering lobby of Grandhurst Hotels. I wasn't here for a doctor's appointment at all. I was here for a job interview. I'd passed the first interview rounds with flying colors over the past couple weeks, and today was the moment of truth. This was the final interview, a one-on-one with the CEO himself, so I was trying to stay calm, trying not to get too excited about the prospect of freedom. I tucked my Wolf Industries employee badge into my purse and took the elevator to the top floor. "Are you Miss Johnson?" A receptionist greeted me the moment I stepped off the elevator car. "Yes, that's me." "Excellent," she said, standing to her feet. "Follow me. Mr. Hurst is ready to see you now." I followed her down the bright white halls as women in heels rushed by us on the other side. I silently envisioned myself walking down these same halls next week, smiling at whatever the hell everyone here seemed so happy about all the time. The receptionist opened the door to a large office that took up half the floor, and inside, the CEO, an attractive gray-haired man, smiled at me as I approached his desk.
"Good morning, Miss Johnson."
Mr. Hurst stood up and extended his hand.
"It's great to finally meet you in person after all these interview rounds."
"You as well, sir." I shook his hand and took a seat.
"You have quite the portfolio, I must say."
He glanced at his computer screen and tapped a few keys on his keyboard.
"You were first in your class from Yale in undergrad, and first in your class at Harvard Law."
He tapped his keyboard again.
"You completed consecutive summers at some pretty outstanding law firms, and now you work at Wolf Industries. Why aren't you working at a law firm?"
"Most of them were downsizing during the recession, sir."
"Ah, I see."
He slid his reading glasses down the bridge of his nose.
"Well, I'm still beyond impressed with your resume. Hell, I don't think we have anyone here who was first in their law class, from an Ivy League at that."
I smiled and softly tapped my foot against the floor. I waited for him to say the four words I'd been waiting to hear all year. "When can you start?" I reminded myself that I needed to hesitate a few seconds before blurting out, "Right fucking now." Don't say fucking, don't say fucking, just say right now.
"After carefully considering everything that you would potentially bring to my company, Miss Johnson," he said after several seconds of silence, "I think I can
start today." I couldn't help myself. "Like right now. I'm willing to share an office, I'm willing to work overtime and weekends, and I'll happily accept 20% less than my current salary."
"Well, that's the thing. I can't hire you, Miss Johnson."
He shut his laptop.
"As impressive as you are, I don't think you would fit in here."
"What? Well, why can't you just give me a chance, even a temporary one, and find out for yourself? I've gotten along just fine with every interviewer I've met here." He sighed.
"Okay, look, I can't hire you because I don't want to be blackballed by Mr. Wolf."
"Come again?" I was confused. "What does Mr. Wolf have to do with anything?"
"Everything,"
he said, crossing his arms.
"Your resume says that you're an executive assistant at his company. It doesn't specify that you work directly under him."
"Everyone works directly under him."
"You know what I mean."
A worried look crossed his face.
"You're his executive assistant. You're the Emily everyone has to go through to get to him. Like, that's you. And you're sitting in my office like that's not the biggest conflict of interest on fucking Wall Street. You're his right hand, for Christ's sake."
"Mr. Wolf has nothing to do with your company, Mr. Hurst."
"Actually, he does,"
he said.
5 years ago, he invested the final 30% we needed into our newest chain of bed and breakfast locations. He also greased some wheels for us with the city zoning department so we could get our new high-rise built closer to the High Line. I won't dare pay him back by stealing his executive assistant. Crossing him is a death wish, and everyone in the city knows it."
I let out a breath, unsure of what to say.
"Besides,"
Mr. Hurst said,
"when he called me, he made it perfectly clear that if I even thought about hiring you or giving you something as small as a consideration, he would, in his own words, sue the fuck out of me."
I felt all the color leaving my face. "You told him I was here?"
"Not at all. He called me a few minutes ago, right before you arrived."
He opened his drawer and pulled out a sheet of paper.
"He also sent me a copy of the loyalty statement that's a part of your employment contract."
He handed it to me.
"He requested that I print a new copy for you, so you can have it as a personal reminder."
My jaw dropped to the floor.
"I'm sure I'll be seeing you again whenever we wrap up the Berkshire deal with Wolf Industries next month."
He stood to his feet and extended his hand once more.
It was a pleasure meeting the Emily, who Mr. Wolf speaks so highly about all the time. I hope you'll tell him I was kind, and that I let you down quite nicely.
I stood to my feet and left the room, not bothering to shake his hand or say goodbye. I was beyond pissed that he wasted my time and enraged that Mr. Wolf blocked me from getting a new job. How did he even know I was coming here? I stepped onto the elevator and bit my bottom lip to prevent myself from screaming. I didn't need a personal copy of that loyalty statement to know what it said. It practically promised that I would never seek another job until long after I'd left his company, and that I'd never speak ill about him in the press. I should have known better. I was a foolish 26-year-old who was high on hopes and dreams when I signed it, thinking that a 4-year term would fly right by. That working for the number one man on Wall Street would make me an asset to any law firm in the country once I was finished. But now, I was a far less foolish 28-year-old, and 2 years of my term felt like 10. I was also certain that the new gray hairs growing at the back of my head were directly attributable to working with him. Stepping out of the Hearst lobby and into a fresh sheet of New York's autumn rain, I held up my umbrella and hailed my town car. I needed to vent about this to Vinny on the drive back, to add this incident to my never-ending list of shit this man had put me through. But when the town car stopped in front of me, I realized that Vinny was not the driver. The back door slowly opened, and a set of Italian leather shoes hit the pavement. Mr. Wolf emerged from the back seat and held the door open, looking at me as my cheeks flushed red.
"Are you going to get in, or are you going to stare at me for the rest of the day?"
I didn't answer. I just let down my umbrella and slid to the far seat.
"Did your doctor say that everything was okay?"
he asked as he sat across from me. "No, actually. He confirmed that the pain in my ass will probably worsen over the next 2 years."
"How unfortunate."
He smiled.
"You can take us back to our office now, Lyle."
The driver shook his head and rolled up the partition before pulling onto Fifth Avenue. Mr. Wolf's stunning blue eyes were still on mine, and his lips slowly curved into that sexy-ass smirk that I'd grown to half love, half loathe.
"You know,"
he said, pulling a small green gift box from his breast pocket,
"I find it quite amusing that you would cheat on me, on our 2-year anniversary, no less."
He set the gift on my lap, but I didn't touch it. It was going into the desk drawer with the other anniversary gift he gave me last year. And the second we returned to the office, I was taking that damn loyalty contract and my employment contract to the law offices across the street to see if they could find any loopholes. It's either that or get myself fired. The town car parked in the private garage at Wolf Industries, and Mr. Wolf held the door open for me once more. He led me to the elevator, and when the doors closed, he looked down at me and lowered his voice.
"I would highly suggest canceling the other 3 interviews you have scheduled for this week as well," he said. "The ones at Deutsche, Goldman, and the Lehman Brothers. That is, unless you want me to continue personally canceling them for you."
The elevator doors sprung open on the top floor, and he stepped out, slowly looking me up and down one last time.
"Oh, and Emily?"
"Yes?"
"Happy anniversary."
The Wolf, Nicholas. There were only a few men in this city who possessed what it took to work on Wall Street, a select few who understood the value of time and loyalty as well as I did. I'd built my company from the ground up, armed with a parting "don't let that city eat you alive when" wish from my father, and a worn black suit that was 2 sizes too big. I started off as a coffee runner, an unwanted scrub on some mega corporation's bloated payroll. Since no one was willing to give me a real job, I asked questions whenever I could. I stayed late and eavesdropped on meetings under the guise of doing my college homework, and when none of the top-tier executives wanted to stay late and recrunch the day's numbers, I volunteered. And years later, I built my own fund, invested in all the stocks they were too scared to touch. Then I eventually became one of the most revered businessmen on Wall Street. If there was a company that piqued my interest, I bought it. If there was a stock that I wanted to invest in, I became an investor by dinner. And if there was a deal that I wanted to make, it was mine within seconds. At least I thought that was the case before this morning. What do you mean Watson's not sure if he wants me to buy his company anymore? I looked at my advisor, Brenton, in utter disbelief. He put it up for fucking sale. Whoever buys it from him doesn't make one bit of a difference. I've told you time and time again that he wants the new owner to be a family man. You're not a family man. I definitely have a family. A family of your own, he sighed. Not a family you call every other week when you happen to remember that they exist. Oh, and definitely not someone who's been Page Six's Bachelor of the Year 8 times in a row. 10 times in a row, but no one's counting. I smiled. But if it'll make Watson feel any better about my personal life and how I'll run his fund in the future, I can call him and honestly admit that I haven't fucked anyone in over 8 months. He gave me a blank stare. You're kidding, right? Unfortunately not. It's been slightly longer than that. Even if I did believe you, and I don't, your restraint from fucking anyone doesn't make you a family man. It just means you're not behaving like your normal self. By family man, he means someone who knows that life is not all work. Someone who can appreciate life's moments outside of the boardroom. I do a great job of that, I said. You said it yourself. My company pays the highest salaries at every level so the employees can enjoy their lives outside of the boardroom. Right. He sat up in his chair. When your second CFO got married, what did you give him as a wedding gift? A generous bonus and a vintage wine. And what exactly did you write on that wine bottle's tag? I sighed. I'm disappointed that you're getting married. I never thought you were the type. What else? I didn't answer. I didn't want to remember. You wrote, I'm pretty sure you'll be divorced in 2 years, so you're better off ditching her and flying to Florida to help me with this Tampa deal. Then again, at least you were kind enough to write, P.S., I hope you at least got a prenup before you signed that contract. See you at work when you get back. Love, Nicholas. I think it was those last two words that made him quit. That was 2 years ago, I said. I don't send those types of notes anymore. Because Emily does them for you. He rolled his eyes. Outside of your company, you don't have any true relationships, and that's exactly what Watson wants his successor to have. He thinks it'll make the owner more empathetic when it comes to certain things. Don't you? Fuck no. I wasn't sure why he was suddenly acting like a saint, since he was far more ruthless than I was when he ran his own firm decades ago. He'd once written the exact 5 words that summed up exactly how I viewed relationships. Worthlessly fickle, useless, and unpredictable. Once they crashed, they never recovered. So I never invested any energy into them. The idea of ever starting a family had never crossed my mind because I saw firsthand what it did to some of my most successful peers. Their work ethic gradually slowed, their drive for power waned, and they began to run their companies on happiness instead of financial sense. And I was completely baffled as to why, after 6 months of negotiating, 5 weeks of endless conference calls, and hours of back and forth, that this CEO was considering backing out of a deal over something so frivolous. I sighed and leaned back in my chair. I need us to seal this deal, Brenton. I'm not taking no for an answer. I'm sure you aren't. He smiled nervously. A $5 billion deal would be a hell of a portfolio boost, especially since it'll make you double that in 10 years once the other deals go through. But if we don't get it, we'll lose $20 billion in the same amount of time. I could guess the rest of his thoughts without him saying a word. Do you have any ideas on how we could get him to change his mind? Finally! He laughed and opened a folder. I've been waiting for you to ask me that all day. Before he could launch into his strategy, my desk phone rang with an unfamiliar number. Hold that thought for 1 second, Brenton. I motioned for him to give me a second. This is Mr. Wolf. I answered the phone. Mr. Wolf, this is Mr. Tanner from the Tanner & Associates firm across the street. You told me to call if Emily Johnson ever came over again? I did, I said. When was she there? Just now, sir. She just left not too long ago. I pulled out my phone and looked at my inbox. Her last email to me was from 30 minutes ago. Subject, dentist appointment.
Mr. Wolf, I seem to have forgotten that I also had a dentist appointment scheduled for today. Since the office is close by, I'm just going to run over and personally reschedule it for a later time, just like you suggested.
Emily Johnson, Executive Assistant to Nicholas A. Wolf, Wolf Industries.
P.S. I forgot to say it back. Happy anniversary. Smiley face.
She's still fucking with me.
What did she ask you for, Mr. Tanner? I asked.
The same thing as always, sir, inquiring if we could look at the contract again and find any loopholes.
Are there any?
No, sir.
Good.
I smiled.
I had that shit looked at every year as well. I'll send an intern over with a token of my appreciation at lunch. Thank you for letting me know.
I ended the call right as Emily stepped into my office with a tray. Wearing her favorite fitted blue dress that never ceased to get my attention, she walked across my floor in her red-bottom heels and gave me her usual sexy glare.
"Good afternoon, Mr. Wolf," she said, setting the tray on my desk. "Brenton, here's your lunch and a copy of the Watson files like you asked. Can I get you anything else?"
"How was your dental appointment?" I narrowed my eyes at her.
"Same as the medical one," she said, narrowing her eyes right back at me. "I'll just have to deal with a certain cavity that'll rot for the next 2 years."
"That's not healthy at all, Emily." Brenton placed his napkin in his lap. "I have a good dentist that can get rid of any cavity. You should see him if yours is telling you things like that." We both looked at him. "What?" he said, stuffing a fry into his mouth. "He's a really good dentist."
"Are there any more appointments you have scheduled for today, Emily?" I asked, trying my best to ignore the fact that she wasn't wearing a bra beneath her dress. "I'd like to know right now." "I'm sure you would," she shrugged. "My lunch break starts now, though. It'll have to wait until I'm done."
She turned and walked away, and I watched her every move until she was long gone. Despite the glare she threw at me on a daily basis, the sarcastic handwritten post-it notes she slipped into my desk, and the fact that she was still secretly taking job interviews, I considered her to be my most loyal employee, and strangely, my only friend. Next to Brenton, she was the only other person in this building I completely trusted. She was also, unfortunately, the sexiest woman I'd ever seen in my life. With her deep and dark green eyes, her coffee-colored hair that fell past her shoulders in waves, and a wardrobe that made my cock stiffen any time she walked into a room, she put every supermodel I'd ever met to shame. Over the past 2 years of her employment, I'd forced myself to deal with the torture of working by her side during countless 10- and 12-hour days. I was still suffering from the longest sexual dry spell because the only person I wanted to fuck was her. But I knew better than to cross that line. "Okay." I took my coffee from the tray and cleared my throat. "Sum up your idea for getting Watson back on our side for this deal in 5 seconds. I think you should get engaged temporarily and show off your real family within the same time frame, so it looks like you're exactly the type of CEO he wants you to be." The words rushed out of his mouth faster than ever. I stared at him long and hard. He'd suggested a lot of questionable shit since becoming my advisor, but this was by far the most ridiculous. "Out of all the available options, you want me to pretend to have a fiancé, just so I can close a deal? A $5 billion deal?" He nodded. "It makes far more sense in context. Let me explain." The Wolf, Nicholas, several days later. The words "let me explain" were almost always a bad omen when they left Brenton's lips, and in the case of Operation Fake Fiancé, they might as well have been a curse.
"Wait, wait."
The 14th applicant of the week stood by my door.
"Give me one more chance, and I promise I won't lie about my past again, Mr. Wolf. I'll tell you about all the drugs, I swear."
"Jesus Christ." I shook my head. Sadly, she wasn't even the worst one we'd interviewed.
"Let's just go."
Brenton led her out of the office. "We'll be in touch." I pulled out my cell phone and sent him a text. "Me. I'm only seeing one more today, Brenton. I'd like to hold on to the rest of my brain cells. Thank you." I hit send and my desk phone rang. "This is Nicholas Wolf," I answered. "You have 2 minutes.
"Good afternoon, Mr. Wolf."
It was a soft female voice.
"My name is Heather McAvoy, and I'm with the carriage firm in Manhattan. I'm calling to ask you about your thoughts in regard to my proposal I sent to your office last week."
"I don't recall receiving a proposal," I said. "Did you get a confirmation email?"
"Yes, it was from the Emily."
"Emily Johnson?" I shook my head. I wasn't sure when everyone around started adding "the" in front of Emily's name.
"Yes, that's the one."
"Hold on for a few seconds." I placed her on hold and called my secretary. Could you tell Miss Johnson to step into my office, please? I ended the call before she could answer, and within seconds, Emily walked into the room. Dressed in a new dress, a fitted beige one that clung to her curves, she crossed her arms and pursed her puffy pink lips. Jesus Christ.
Yes, Mr. Wolf, she said. Are you checking to make sure I haven't broken away from my chains today?
You've fantasized about me putting you in chains? I asked. Let's discuss that. She rolled her eyes.
I'm on a conference call with one of your estate brokers right now. What do you want?
I have Heather McAvoy from the carriage firm on the line. She claims you sent her a confirmation email about a proposal I've never seen. I know you're attempting to get fired, but surely there's a better way than hiding proposals from me.
I'm not hiding anything from you, she said. I read over it and decided it wasn't worth your time. She's only calling you because I told her that you had far more important things to do than read a high school level brief. But by all means, if you'd like to take a look for yourself, I placed a copy of it in your cloud. Can I get you anything else?
Your mouth. I'd like some coffee.
So would I.
She walked toward the door.
There's plenty of it downstairs in the employee cafe.
I waited for her to softly slam my door as usual and found the proposal right where she said it was. I managed to make it through the first 5 lines before surrendering. I hung up on Miss McAvoy and quickly drafted an email with the subject line, "If Emily says no, it's a fucking no." The second I hit send, an intern rushed into my office with a cup of coffee. She blushed as she set it on my desk, offering me a small smile. "How many sugars did you put in there?" I asked.
"Zero."
She blushed again.
"Miss Johnson specifically said you wanted it black?"
Of course she did. I pulled my drawer open and removed my hidden panel, finding a post-it note in Emily's handwriting instead of my stash of raw sugar packets.
"Stop stealing the sugar packets from my office. Thank you. Emily. P.S. Not that I care, because I don't, but your doctor did say your stress could be lessened by limiting sugars and a few cups of your daily coffee."
I groaned and sipped the bitter coffee. I started to text Brenton about canceling today's final interview since it was taking him so long, but he walked into my office with a pretty blonde at his side. "Nicholas Wolf, this is Hannah Stone." He walked her over to me. "Hannah Stone, this is Nicholas Wolf."
"It's so nice to finally meet you in person, Mr. Wolf."
Her cheeks reddened as she extended her hand.
"I've read about you in a lot of newspapers and magazines."
"Only half of what's printed is true." I shook her hand and pulled out a chair for her, bracing myself for what I hoped would be the final interview. "So, Miss Stone," Brenton cleared his throat, "we're running a bit short on time today, so we'll skip the small talk and jump right into the improvisation part. I'm going to ask you a few questions regarding the documents I asked you to study and most of what you've already read about Mr. Wolf, and you're going to pretend like we're shooting a documentary and that you're his wife. Okay?"
"Okay."
She batted her eyes at me.
"I'm ready to play Mrs. Wolf. I'm getting paid for this, right?"
"You'll get paid if you get the job."
"Wait, what?"
She looked confused.
"I don't do free job interviews."
"What the fuck?" I shot Brenton a look, but he ignored me. "Miss Stone will gladly compensate you for your time at the end of this interview."
"Will you also validate my parking?"
she asked.
"I parked in an NAW spot in the private garage."
"A NAW spot?" He looked confused.
"Yeah, the spot said NAW and it had CEO painted underneath it, but I figured it was an employee prank because Mr. Wolf is the CEO, not whoever this NAW person is, you know?"
We both looked at her in stunned silence. "Miss Stone," Brenton said finally, "those 3 letters, N-A-W, are indeed for Mr. Wolf. They were painted there for brevity."
"Well, why would you ever go by the name Gnaw?"
she snorted.
"You have to know that Mr. Wolf sounds so much better."
"Can we just get this over with?" I asked, downing the rest of my coffee. I felt like I'd already lost 2 brain cells during this conversation, and I wasn't going to make it too much longer. "Noted." Brenton pulled out his notebook and sighed. "Miss Stone, what's your husband's favorite color?"
"Yellow."
She winked at me.
"But according to the Business Journal, sometimes it's green."
"It's always orange. How does he like his coffee?"
"With tons of cream, like at least 5 pumps. Oh, and he always has to have an extra shot of caramel."
"I'm allergic to caramel." "His favorite movie?"
"It's a toss-up between the Titanic and the Notebook."
She smiled.
"We watch them together all the time. Sometimes he cries at the end."
"I've never cried at a goddamn movie. Can you tell me his favorite book?"
No, but I can tell you mine. It's Cosmo.
That's not a book. Okay, then. Brenton shook his head and shut the questionnaire folder. Miss Stone, did you happen to read any of the materials I emailed to you last week in regard to these questions?
I started to, but you emailed them to me on a Saturday. Saturday is my me time.
What about the days after? You had 6 other days of the week to prepare for this.
Not really,
she scoffed.
Sunday through Friday are the days I need to get ready for my me time.
I let out a few loud coughs, my signal that he needed to end this shit before I did. Last thing, Miss Stone, he stood to his feet. I called Harvard to verify that you were a student there and they couldn't locate your records. Did you attend there under a different name?
What?
She looked confused.
I never said I went to Harvard.
You wrote it right here, he said, pointing to her application. It says Harvard right next to the word college.
Oh,
she shrugged.
I just wrote that because I figured Mr. Wolf would be more into an Ivy League woman.
Fair enough. He clicked his pen.
What college did you actually attend? Well, I applied to tons of colleges. None of them actually let me in, so it's not technically my fault that I don't have a true answer for that right now, you know? I tried.
His jaw dropped. It was interesting meeting you. I stood up and extended my hand. We'll be in touch.
Oh, great. This was so much fun.
She smiled and shook my hand. Then she looked at Brenton.
I meant what I said about being paid for this interview. My time isn't free.
Go to the 5th floor and tell them Brenton sent you. They'll take care of it.
Okay.
She slung her purse over her shoulder and winked at me as she walked toward the door.
I'll keep my phone volume on high so I won't miss the callback. When exactly will you be making your final decision?
Neither of us said anything. And thankfully, she didn't stick around for an answer. Jesus. Brenton slumped onto the sofa. I didn't think it could get much worse. You and me both. You know what? He sighed. I'll find a new, different way for us to get this deal done and have some options to you tonight. I don't think I can sit through any more of these. My thoughts exactly. Where are we on the Smith and Claxton acquisition? It's almost done, he said. Last time I checked, Emily was having the contracts looked over by 3 different legal teams. And the Barron account? Secured as of this morning, and the papers will need your signature tomorrow evening. Before I could ask about another deal we were pursuing, a knock came to the door. Come in, I called out. The door opened, and Emily walked into the room with a stack of freshly printed contracts.
The Smith and Claxton contracts are officially binding and clear,
she said, setting the papers on my desk.
I've highlighted a few questionable terms you may want to adjust in the final round of negotiations, but they're very minor.
Brenton smiled at her.
I've called ahead to the Four Seasons since you're staying there tonight to finalize things with Hayward, and the manager has assured me that there won't be any caramels or sugars in the coffee stations. You'll have 3 suit options in the closet waiting, although I highly suggest you go with the black and gray Armani one, as that one looks best under the lobby's lighting.
You told me you hated that suit.
No, I told you I hated how much you spent on that suit.
She uncapped a pen and handed it to me.
One of the interns is going to come by in an hour to pick up the Voss files, so you need to initial all 60 pages by then.
Why are you leaving early again?
Because my amazing boss is unknowingly treating me to an anniversary spa session on his credit card, and I think I'm going to take my boyfriend.
Since when are you dating someone? I clenched my jaw.
Seeing as though I never have the time. Never,
she sighed.
I'm going with my sister. Jealous much?
Extremely. Well, why couldn't you schedule your session on the weekend and not during the hours I'm actually paying you for? I swear she was the only woman who could arouse me with her goddamn sarcasm. I told you I needed your help to prepare for my 4 o'clock meeting.
And I told you I placed some helpful post-it notes in the files.
She crossed her arms.
Any other unnecessary questions before I leave?
I have some. Brenton leaned forward in his chair. Humor me for a second, Emily. What's Nicholas's favorite color?
Orange, although he lies in every single interview by saying it's green because he somehow thinks that makes him look smarter.
She looked at me and narrowed her eyes.
It doesn't.
How does he take his coffee?
2 sugars if no one is watching.
She shrugged.
Black if someone is.
His favorite movie?
The Godfather.
1, 2, or 3.
I think he's watched them all so many times he can't even tell the difference anymore.
She headed toward the door.
Any other random trivia questions?
Final one, just for fun. What's his favorite book?
The Catcher in the Rye.
She opened the door and stepped into the hallway.
I'm officially off now. Goodbye.
The door closed and Brenton looked at me, smiling. I take back what I said about drafting new idea options. I think we just found your fake fiancé.
I don't fucking think so.
The assistant, Emily. You're late again. Jenna looked up at me as I entered the relaxation room. I've been waiting on you for 2 hours. Sorry. I untied my robe and took a seat on the edge of the mineral bath. I forgot about a lunch meeting I'm hosting tomorrow and I needed to make sure I had the right files. She shook her head. You need to tell your boss that you deserve a bonus and an additional raise for everything you do. I'm already the highest paid EA in the city. It's still not enough, she said, pulling her hair into a bun. Are you sure he's fine with us running up a $10,000 spa tab today? Absolutely. I placed my phone onto a towel and leaned back against the warm stones. I'm sure he'll be utterly thrilled about it once he gets the bill. So I take it that you're still trying to get fired? Yes, I laughed, but I think I finally realized that he's not letting me go until my contract is up. It could be worse, she shrugged. You could be me and working to find yourself. At least you're established. I gave her a blank stare. My sister was living the ultimate girl comes to New York City and takes over the world fantasy life. As a renowned musician, her days were spent composing songs for Broadway plays and international recording artists, critiquing sunset symphonies, and earning tons of money anytime she decided to pick up her cello and perform a private show. Then again, her nights were spent picking up sexy strangers in elite bars who kept me up all night with their moaning. Stop looking at me like that, she splashed me, laughing. I would trade in my musical talents for your lawyer brain any day, especially if it meant I got the chance to work under Nicholas Wolfe every day. You know he's the most demanding man on the planet, I said. It's not what it seems at all. So, doesn't mean that I wouldn't love to be around him all the time. Maybe you should try and sleep with him. Maybe that will get you out of your contract. I rolled my eyes. Despite the thick, palpable tension that existed between Nicholas and me since my first day, I highly doubted either of us would ever cross that line. Sure, there'd been rare moments when I thought he looked at me a certain way, moments when I was happy that he was staying late to work by my side, but outside of a sarcastic innuendo here or there, we were strictly platonic. I'll pass on the whole making a move on my boss idea. Figures. Well, if he wasn't your boss, like if you were just friends and he attempted to make a move on you, would you let him? In a heartbeat. Never. Interesting. She held her hands under one of the fountains. Anyway, in next month's edition of I Love My Identical Twin, I need you to stand in for me at a meet and greet at Gershwin Theater. You just have to show up for 20 minutes, introduce yourself as me, and take a few pictures. I'll do it if you go as me to my employee renewal session again at the end of the year. I really hate that it takes over 2 hours to listen to pointless speeches and get a new name badge. Done deal. She smiled. By the way, I'll probably be bringing home another guy tonight, so you may want to wear headphones. And before you ask me, yes, I know him. He's a hedge fund manager. Hedge fund managers are the scum of Wall Street. What's his name? I'll ask him to remind me when he comes over. I shook my head and tossed a loofah at her. Before I could tell her that I was slightly jealous of our newfound sex life, my phone sounded with the special ringtone I had for Mr. Wolf. Ugh. I picked it up and hit ignore. Seconds later, he called again. I hit ignore once more and sent him a text message. Me. I'm busy running up a 10K spa tab right now. I can't answer. I turned off my phone and slid it across the tile. Then I slipped further into the hot tub's foam, shutting my eyes as I leaned against the underwater bench. I was beginning to doze off when I felt someone tapping my shoulder. Yes? I opened my eyes to see a spa attendant looking at me. Is something wrong? Not at all, Miss Johnson. She held out a phone. Mr. Wolf called and asked to speak to you. What the? I took the phone from her hand and held it up to my ear. Yes, Mr. Wolf?
You said you were only going to run up a $10,000 tab, he said, The manager says you're on track to hit 11.
I'm planning to stay until they close so I can get it up to 20. He let out a low laugh.
I need you to meet me at my penthouse suite at 6 tomorrow morning, he said. It's extremely important.
I sat up a bit. Anytime he asked me to meet him at his penthouse at an ungodly hour meant that an employee was betraying or stealing from him, and he'd been utterly ruthless in his plans to even the score. Is this about someone going behind your back again? I asked. I can start the termination paperwork tonight.
It's about you.
What? I've never stolen anything from you.
Nothing except my patience.
His voice was firm.
Vinny will pick you up at 5:30. Don't keep him waiting. And pick up the Rosenberg files from Syntec on your way here, along with my coffee and bagel. Try not to drink half of it like you usually do, or at least be more discreet about it.
I hated that the sound of his voice, even in moments when he was being a demanding ass, was a turn-on. With all due respect, this call could have waited until after I left the spa.
With all due respect, you know I'm not the waiting type.
He hung up. The Assistant, Emily. I leaned against the town car's window early the next morning, taking small sips of Mr. Wolf's coffee while scrolling through my latest emails. Subject, is the Wolf dating supermodel Samantha Hendricks? Page 6 says so. Subject, I heard the Wolf was looking at engagement rings for her yesterday. Subject, give us the details ASAP, Emily. I sighed, feeling a slight pang of jealousy in my chest. I'd assumed he was dating her long ago, since every Monday afternoon was reserved with a phone conversation with Samantha, and he never allowed me to intercept those calls. They went straight to his private video line, and no one was allowed in his office during that time. Even though Page 6 was pretty accurate when it came to all things for Mr. Bachelor of the Year, I'd never actually seen him with anyone else since I started working for him, and I'd never heard him mention anything about his sex life. I honestly didn't see how he could ever find the time. Then again, if anyone can find the time for random sex, I'm sure he can. I responded to each of my coworkers' emails with an, "I'll find out as soon as I can," but regardless of when I discovered the truth, I wouldn't say a word about it to them. I vowed long ago that I would never share any details about his personal life with anyone, that asshole or not. I would keep his secrets like I hoped my future executive assistant would hold mine.
We're here, Miss Johnson.
Vinny opened the back door for me.
Should I say a prayer for you before you go inside?
Say a prayer for us both. I stepped out of the car. I'm taking you down with me if I get fired. He laughed and waited for me to walk inside the building before returning to the driver's seat. I rode the elevator to the top floor and held my access card against the key panel for his penthouse. Then I took a deep breath before pushing the doors open. I walked through his kitchen, parlor, and his living room, finally stopping once his blue gaze met mine. He was leaning against the floor-to-ceiling windows that overlooked Fifth Avenue, looking beyond sexy in a white t-shirt and blue jeans. His dark hair was slightly messier than usual, as if he'd just rolled out of bed.
You can have a seat now.
He motioned for me to sit on his sofa. He sat across from me and reached for his coffee.
Should I assume that you didn't steal any sips of this today, like usual?
I've told you countless times before that I don't drink your coffee. I don't like the extra vanilla you always request. He spun the nearly empty cup around in his hands, tapping the part where remnants of my red lipstick stained the lid. That's Vinny's lipstick, I said.
I'm sure.
He returned the coffee to me and tapped his fingers against his knee.
I wanted to talk to you privately because I have a proposition for you.
Yes, I would like to quit my job as your assistant as of today, I said, hopeful. Thank you for your offer. His lips curved into a smile, but he didn't laugh.
I've been very lucky throughout my career, and I think I've reached a position where I can afford to go after only the things I want. Would you agree?
I would.
Good.
He poured a glass of water and handed it to me.
Because I'm willing to let you out of your employment contract if you agree to help me land this particular deal.
I sat up, completely intrigued.
However, there are some conditions that come with this. I'm listening. Well, first, I'll need you to help me appear like a more family-friendly CEO to the public. I'll need people to think I'm a man of commitment, and that I've been secretly committed to something private for a long time.
You want me to send out some positive press releases about your undying commitment to charity work?
It's a bit more complicated than that. I'll need your personal services for a few consistent weeks.
I blinked, waiting for him to get to the good part, the I'm finally getting out of this contract part.
You'll also need to sign a new, separate non-disclosure agreement so we can ensure that we're both being loyal and reaching the same end goal. Understand?
No. I sipped my water. I'm actually quite confused right now.
Emily, I need you to...
He hesitated, looking as if the next words were painful to say.
I need you to pretend to be my girlfriend. Actually, I need you to be my fiancé for the next 30 days.
I dropped my glass to the floor, and it shattered into pieces. I waited for him to laugh, to tell me that this was some type of joke, and he was simply testing my sense of humor. No laughter came. No further explanation came either. He set a stack of papers next to me.
Agree to this, and you won't have to work for me anymore when we're finished.
I remained silent.
Are you going to say something, Emily?
I blinked.
Fine.
He sighed.
You've always seemed like the hopeless romantic type, so I guess I can oblige since I'm asking you to do this.
He handed me a pen.
Emily Johnson, will you marry me?
No. I stood to my feet and smoothed my dress. Hell no. Would you like your morning updates here or in your office?
I would like your signature here on this paper.
I'll pass, I said. I don't recall seeing pretending to be the boss's wife in my job description, and trust me, I have that description down by heart.
You'd be playing my fiancé, not my wife. There's a difference.
Doubt it. You're undeserving of both, I said, more than ready to change the subject. Anyway, what time would you like the Claxton proposal on your desk?
I'm offering you the chance to leave. Isn't that what you want?
That's not enough to put up with you outside of work for 30 days. I shook my head. I thought you were happy about being a single CEO. You were Mr. Page Six's Bachelor of the Year 8 times in a row.
It was 10, but I'm not counting.
He stood to his feet.
I personally think this would be rather easy for the both of us, since we've spent so much time together anyway. I know you just as well as you know me.
No, you don't. I picked up my purse and started walking toward the door. You don't know me at all.
I know that you hate your job.
Because I tell you that every day.
I know that you're a lightweight. You can't drink more than 2 drinks in an afternoon without getting a headache.
Oh, wow. I turned around to face him. That's practically soulmate material.
I figured you'd be difficult about this.
He rolled his eyes.
So I included a financial bonus in the contract.
How much is it?
Why don't you come back to my couch and read it?
Because I don't want to. I crossed my arms. How much is it?
$50,000.
$50,000? I scoffed. You're wearing a watch that's 3 times more expensive than that.
My watch has never taken secret job interviews behind my back.
That's not enough money for what you're asking me to do. I turned away again and opened his door. I'll have the Walter Claxton proposal on your desk by 2 o'clock this afternoon.
$100,000.
No, I said. Is there anything else?
$500,000.
I'll also be sure to have the Carter case study on hand so we can see if their predictions have any merit. I continued to ignore his offer. I think they're fine, but it won't hurt to be 100% sure.
$1 million.
He glared at me.
Final offer.
My voice caught in my throat. Make it $5 million and I'll consider.
You're out of your goddamn mind.
I shrugged and rushed out of his condo, stepping onto the elevator before he could come after me. As the doors glided shut, I cursed under my breath for not accepting the million. Hell, I should have accepted the half. I debated going back upstairs and telling him that I changed my mind, that I wanted to read over the contract and negotiate the terms. Before I could make up my mind, I heard his signature ringtone sounding from my phone. It was an email. Subject: the deal.
I think it would be in your best interest to accept my offer. I highly doubt the man you eventually marry will be as well endowed as me. Nicholas.
Nope, I clearly made the right decision. The assistant, Emily. I hit ignore on Mr. Wolf's 20th call of the morning, sending him a nice, whatever you need, as long as it's not about that, let me know about it via email message instead. I was in disbelief that he'd asked me to marry him, and I should have known something was up when Brenton sent me a text message about my ring size last night. I would have never guessed that, though. Opening my laptop, I logged into our portal of pending contracts. I wanted to see which of them was supposedly worth going through a month of lies for. It took me all of a minute to find it. The $5 billion Watson deal with the family-oriented CEO. I shut my eyes and sighed. We'd worked on the math of that deal together, right after his previous CFO left. And it was clear that without that deal and the pieces that came with it, new deals would falter in the years to come. Still, there has to be a better idea than getting a fake fiancé to seal that deal. Savannah? I pressed my intercom button a few hours later. Yes, Miss Johnson? Could you bring me a fresh printout of the Watson files? Absolutely. I'll bring it in 5 minutes. I ended the call and sent a quick email to our research department. As I was organizing my notes, Savannah walked into my office with a cup of coffee. Here you are, Miss Johnson, she said, placing it on my desk. Would you like anything else? Coffee? That's not a printout of the Watson files, Savannah. I know. She lowered her voice. Mr. Wolf said the only thing I was allowed to bring you today was coffee. Excuse me? He made it very clear that he would fire me if I chose to do otherwise. Would you like some more coffee, maybe? No, thank you. I waited for her to leave my office and called Vinny.
At your service, Miss Johnson.
Vinny, are you in the garage by chance?
I am.
Great. I left my briefcase and a box of files on your back seat this morning. Can I meet you down there so I can get them?
No need, Miss Johnson. I'll bring everything to you.
He hung up, and I spotted a note on the sleeve of the coffee cup Savannah brought in.
Come to my office and read the contract. Now. Nicholas Wolf.
I tossed it into the trash and shook my head. I couldn't wait to see the look on my sister's face when I told her the reason why he wanted to meet with me this morning. Seconds later, my door opened, and Vinny walked inside with a different cup of coffee. What the? I crossed my arms.
Sorry, Miss Johnson. He set it on my desk. I have orders from Mr. Wolf today in regards to anything you ask me for, and I'm not allowed to drive you home until he gives me a verbal okay.
Are you serious? Did he send out a company-wide memo or something?
He smiled. Yeah, he did, actually.
May I see it?
Of course.
He pulled out his phone and handed it to me. Subject: important. Emily Johnson.
Miss Johnson is working on a high-priority task for the company this afternoon, and since you are a member of my team who has direct daily contact with her, you are not to do anything that will distract her from this task at hand. Should she ask you for anything, you will immediately deliver her a cup of coffee. That's all she needs from you today. Failure to comply will result in your immediate termination. Nicholas A. Wolf. P.S. One of you needs to bring me my lunch and my goddamn updates.
Ugh. I picked up my phone to send him a scathing message in response, but he'd emailed me first. Subject: the deal. Again.
Miss Johnson, I rewrote the terms of this agreement and adjusted the financial compensation to the amount you requested. I highly suggest you come to my office to pick up the contract. I also suggest that you give me an answer by the end of the day. Otherwise, the security team will not allow you to leave the building. Sincerely, Nicholas A. Wolf.
I rolled my eyes and stood up. Thanks for showing me that email, Vinny, I said. I'll call you when I'm ready to leave later today.
Looking forward to it.
I waited until he left the room and headed over to Mr. Wolf's office. When I walked through the door, he looked up from his desk and smiled.
I see you've reconsidered my offer, he said, holding up a manila envelope. Good decision.
I haven't reconsidered anything. I walked over and snatched it from his hand. I already gave you an answer.
You gave me the wrong answer.
I don't want to marry you.
Hence the word fiancé. And then pretend.
He looked at me,
It's only for 30 days, and I'm willing to rewrite any part of the terms that you don't like, minus the obvious fiancé